From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Florida has developed a reputation around the nation and around the globe for its weirdness. This is due in part to some of the unusual headlines coming out of the Sunshine State that often go viral online, documenting the sometimes criminal exploits of our residents and visitors. That's the general topic of new books from Tampa Bay Times reporter and author Craig Pittman and former Miami Herald columnist and author Dave Barry. We'll be talking with both writers. Plus, a retrospective exhibition of political cartoons from Doug McGregor opens today at Big Arts on Sanibel Island. The exhibit covers McGregor's work extending from the Carter administration to the current presidential election. His work appeared daily in the Fort Myers News Press for more than 23 years. A look back at McGregor's work as we explore the power and role of editorial cartoons throughout history. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. Political cartoons have a long history in the United States, providing political commentary alongside their punchlines, and they've created now iconic images like Uncle Sam, the Democrats' donkey, and the Republican elephant that have taken on meaning far beyond the panels of the daily cartoon. One man who knows the power of political cartoons especially well is Doug McGregor. He's been drawing them for nearly 40 years, including 23 years of daily political cartoons at the News Press in Fort Myers from 1988 through 2011. His work still appears in the paper every Sunday. Those political cartoons are the focus of a new retrospective exhibition at Big Arts on Sanibel Island. Collecting 36 years of cartoons from political campaigns for more than three decades, the retrospective, entitled Doug McGregor's Campaign Cartoons, 1980 to 2016, a hysterical and historical retrospective, opens today and runs through October 2nd. On September 30th, there will be a public reception for the exhibit. For the remainder of the hour, we'll explore his political cartoons from Jimmy Carter to this year's presidential election and talk about the power of cartoons to question authority, highlight injustice, discuss social issues, and the role of cartoons in our political dialogue. We'll also look at political cartoons of the past and how they have changed and continue to evolve. Joining me now is writer, author, and cartoonist Doug McGregor. Doug, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Well, it's good to be back. Thank you.
And listeners can join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. You can also share your thoughts on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media and tweet your ideas at us with hashtag Gulf Coast Live. We also invite you to send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. And Doug, you drew cartoons for the News Press for more than 20 years, but tell us about your path to that job. What got you started in cartooning, and when did it become a way to express political ideas?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, I started when I was in second grade. I drew Snoopy on a doghouse, got pretty good at it actually, and the teacher reminded me that someone else had that gig. So I needed to start my own style, and I did in high school, and I continued in college. I did sports cartoons for the student newspaper at Syracuse University. Once you see your work published, that's it. It gets you hooked.
All right.
So I needed to find a job that I could get full-time working 9 to 5 or every day, get a salary position. And editorial cartooning was something I was always interested in.
And political cartoons can, you know, make their point with a sledgehammer and labels on everything in the cartoon, or they can be wordless. And, you know, the art itself tells the entire story. In your experience, what elements make a good political cartoon?
It's the visual effect. Less is more. If you over-label, cartoons back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s usually were pretty well labeled. I grew up with wonderful cartoonists studying their work when I was a kid, actually just opening the paper. And Herblock comes to mind as a guy who has been there forever, and he was probably 50, 60 years worth of work. But he tended to label quite a bit. But that actually helped the reader in a sense because all the labeling meant something. And but later on is just get that visual impact first, not label everything.
I don't know if you're familiar with cartoonist Kate Beaton, but she had actually done a panel series sort of poking fun at political cartoons around the American Revolutionary War era, kind of explaining that sometimes they would even have these long paragraphs afterwards explaining all the symbolism.
Absolutely. Well, and the good thing about that, I remember taking the exam, the 40-week test, the Regents exam in New York State, and it was a history. And it was an essay that you could write based on the cartoon. And usually it was a Herblock cartoon. So thank God Mr. Herblock labeled everything to understand what part of that cartoon you were going to write about.
And as a writer and an artist, how do you pick a topic for cartoons?
Good question, but it's usually the water cooler test, what people are talking about at work. My goodness, sometimes I didn't have a cartoon idea at the news press, and about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, people would see me walking around the office, and they'd say, oh, here comes Doug. He has no cartoon idea. Obviously, I'm picking their brain. And what happened to you this morning on the way to work? What have you been thinking about? What have you been talking about at home at the dinner table? That kind of thing usually lends itself to top-of-mind conversation.
Is it often kind of a group effort, you know, discussing multiple ideas with editors or other opinion piece writers? Or?
Not necessarily. I love just coming up with my own ideas. And of course, fellow cartoonists across the country, not so lucky. They had to do 4 or 5 sketches for their editors. And gosh, I just come up with one idea that was spelled right to get in the paper. So.
And does the art come first or the punchline?
Good question. Sometimes you get a visual and first you draw the picture first, and then sometimes adding words to it is just duplicating too much. So I try to take out some things in the cartoon. Sometimes it needs a little push, so you have to add a couple labels in there just so people are clear about it. That's the difficulty, is finding the cartoon when it's done. And you look at it and you got about 8 seconds for the reader to make sense of it, and does it have the clarity test. And if it does, well, then yes, definitely want to keep it the way it is.
All right. And, you know, national politicians are on TV, their faces, even their caricatures can become iconic. But I know you've talked about the importance of keeping political cartoons local for local audiences. Mm-hmm. What's different about creating a cartoon that's impactful for a local issue or a local person who's perhaps, you know, not as well known?
Good point. Yeah, local politics takes precedent because you're working at a paper, the mid-sized paper like the news press. They would prefer me to do a state or a local cartoon, so I would. But yeah, local politicians take precedent, or local issues, particularly around here where the environment's always in the news, good or bad, and it's usually bad. So a protector of the environment that I've been all these years, I definitely would end up not always we're doing an environmental cartoon, but it has something to do with development or something like that. So yeah, pay attention to local. All politics is local, as they say.
Mm. Well, let's talk about some of your highlights from working, you know, as the political cartoonist for the news press for 23 years. You know, you saw everything from the end of the Reagan 80s to George H.W. Bush to the Bill Clinton administration. What stands out about the first decade of drawing politics at the news press for you?
Oh, well, yeah, I started in 1988, so George Bush and Dan Quayle were running against Mike Dukakis, Lloyd Benson, and that wasn't a stellar election by any means. But I think it changed when Clinton won in 92, because I had done a cartoon with Bush showing off his fishing trophies and all the different fishes that he had won over the years, and particularly with international politics and that kind of thing. But the one fish that got away from him was the Slick Willy fish. So that was the trophy that stood up there on the wall, but there was nothing there. It had gone. And I had a thought of getting that cartoon into a book, but my friend who – I had a friend in Cape Coral who knew someone in Kennebunkport, who knew someone who knew the Bushes. So I sent that book off with the cartoon in it and the original cartoon to that person who knew that person who knew that person, and didn't think anything of it. And about, 4 or 5 months later, I get a call, and this woman – is on the phone with me. I'm at work. I'm right at my desk drawing. And the woman says, Mr. McGregor, are you there? I said, yeah, well, there's someone here who would love to talk to you. And I said, great. Who's that? He said, well, Mr. Bush would like to thank you personally for your cartoon. Yes. And he did. So I'm on the phone with the president of the United States. It's like, oh, not your average day, right? So yeah. I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, dear God, what am I going to say? And he starts talking about fishing because he liked to go to book Granite Fish, and I don't fish at all. So I'm just like winging it, you know, for 2 minutes. I didn't. It was very pleasant, very personable. That's the kind of gentleman he was. You know, just a great guy to be able to say thank you for a cartoon that he didn't know me from Adam, you know. So big thrill for the day. And I went out in the newsroom and said, hey, the president just called me. And they go, right.
Yeah, right.
It was one of those days. So it was a good day for that.
Is this this Blue Fishes cartoon, is that going to be in the exhibition?
Yeah, it's in there. Actually, the original's up in Syracuse University. I put a number of my cartoons originals up there. It was where I graduated. So
oh,
they're in the archive up there in the bird library.
All right. And the second half of your time with the news press, you know, saw the contentious 2000 election. We touched on that a little bit in the first half of the show, you know, with its recounts and hanging chads and eventually the Supreme Court case of Bush v. Gore. What was it like to draw, you know, cartoons at a time when there was no clear winner in such a major race?
You know, it was good and bad. It was good because you knew that everyone was talking about it. So I think I did 34 cartoons in a row about that Florida 2000 election. And, you know, it had twists and turns, and it was constantly on the news. So obviously people paid attention to the cartoons that were in the paper regarding that. But, you know, it was just a weird election. People realize, I guess, there was something like almost 100,000 votes that went to Ralph Nader. And if those Nader votes had been – you know, one way or the other, particularly for Gore, you know, he could have won the election. So, I just had a field day. I really did.
And let's turn to the 2016 presidential election, what's going on this year. You know, regardless of any personal political leanings,
sure,
most can agree that 2016 has been a very unusual year. We now see we're less than 3 months away from the November election. We've had a contentious primary season in both parties. We have the unexpected nomination of Donald Trump by the Republican Party. We have candidates from both parties at unprecedented low levels of acceptance by voters. You know, third-party candidates vying to get on the debate stage. What is it like drawing political cartoons this year in particular?
It's a Cat 5 hurricane for, you know, cartoon fodder, I think. It's just wonderful. It's great. I mean, between what Donald Trump's going to say the next day and obviously his hair. God love his hair. You know, that's just wonderful. And in fact, I love his plane too, because I put an extra segment of his plane. He's got that aerodynamic hair in the front of his plane now that I draw as well. So, and, you know, Hillary, I've drawn her over the years, so she's a good one to draw as well. But I have too much fun drawing Trump, especially when he falls into sinkholes and that kind of thing with just opening his mouth.
Right. We're speaking with Doug McGregor, a political cartoonist whose work appeared daily in the Fort Myers News Press from 1988 through 2011. That work is now part of a 50-cartoon retrospective running through October 2nd at Big Arts on Sanibel Island. We're looking back on more than three decades of political cartoons in South Florida and at the power of cartoons in our political discourse and the role of cartoons in history right up to this year's election. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Write to us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Tweet us using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or share your thoughts by email, gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. And looking back on those years at the news press, what do you take away about the value and contribution of political cartoons to our political dialogue? How do they help folks maybe even stay informed who otherwise – like that might be the connection?
You know. Well, that's a good question because, you know, when you do open any page, you go right to the photograph or the picture, and it's just the way the eye is, you know. So there's my opportunity, and it's at the top of the page. So if your eye goes right to the top and there it is, you have, like I said, about 8 seconds to make your point across. And thank goodness the news press gave me a lot of a lot of freedom to express my views and my First Amendment right to say what I want to say. So I'm treated as a visual columnist in a sense. And I love the job. I still do. I love getting the fact that I draw my cartoon on Thursday morning now for the Sunday paper. So if anything happens on a Friday or Saturday, I'm out of luck kind of in a way. But the news press has been great to run a second one on the weekend if needed. But they've been wonderful to work with over the years. And, you know, it was too bad that I lost the position in 2011. But I since have worked now with Lee Memorial Health System doing arts and health care. I'm the coordinator for that. But, yeah, having the cartoon as the focal point on the opinion section, and there's letters to the editor, wonderful letters. You know, the editorials do not have to reflect what I have to say. And that the cartoon always was my own. I wasn't an illustrator for the opinion of the day. Thank goodness. That would I never work for a paper who allowed me to do that. But I would just always –
Is that common in your industry? Like would your colleagues at like a different paper maybe have to maybe – sort of, I guess, compromise their integrity a little bit just to sort of follow along with an editorial opinion that the paper holds?
Sometimes that happens. But the other thing is that if you come up with four or five, six ideas for the editor to look at during the day and you put your strongest one on top, inevitably, sometimes in some papers, they'd pick the sixth one, which was the weakest one, which was the one that wasn't going to cause controversy. So News Press never did that to me. They were very, very good about holding my my ire and holding my will to say what I wanted to do every day.
What's the greatest compliment you can receive on one of your cartoons?
Oh, my gosh. That's a good question. I would have to say cutting it out, putting it on the refrigerator door.
There you go.
You know, or send it to a friend up in Ohio, or send it to a friend in Indiana or wherever in the world. Just having the time to cut it out and send it to people. Well, that's the old way of doing it because that's the snail mail. But now it's sending it by tweet or by message or whatever. So it is. It's great to share cartoons if you like them.
And political cartoons are usually on a paper's op-ed pages. Nonetheless, there's a frequent critique that news and media should strive for a neutral ground. What do you say to people who argue a certain cartoon or issue that maybe you've poked fun at is biased or maybe goes too far or crosses some line?
Well, Donald Trump does it every day, so I don't imagine, you know, a cartoon is supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be very satirical and it's supposed to be, you know, get up to the envelope right there, cross over into the line of bad taste, and you got to be careful. I mean, look at the people over in Europe. They have an amazing satirical bent. They get away with a lot more than we do over in this country, I would think. Now, of course, then they go to the extreme of the Danish cartoonists. God love them. You know, they paid with their lives. So I don't take what I do lightly every day. It's important to do my best work. If I'm going to be very controversial, I had to be careful. I'll run it by my editor first and say, hey, this one's going to be a little touchy. What do you think? They'll either tone it down or they'll say, no, we're going to run it, Doug. And 9 times out of 10, they'd say, let's run it. So I was blessed in that way for many years.
Can you think of maybe one or two that maybe sparked, you know, a great deal of controversy or debate?
Oh, gee, yeah, probably the 9/11 cartoon I did. You know, knowing, and the gentleman that was just on, Craig and Dave, they were talking about the fact that the terrorists were being trained to fly the planes here in Florida. Well, you know, that was a thought to think about. President Bush said something about any part of the world that harbors terrorists will pay the ultimate price. I said, I'm going to do a cartoon on that. So I did a two-panel cartoon, and I had him saying just what he had said, and then I had a secretary whisper in his ear while he was at the podium. And then the second panel said, except Florida, of course. Well, that caused a lot of controversy because, you know, Florida, you know, we knew what the terrorists were doing later on. Mm-hmm. Boy, I got a lot of hate mail for that one. I got a lot of canceled subscriptions, and the editor was, you know, taking phone calls every minute. So, but I don't regret ever doing it. I regret nothing about that cartoon, actually. So,
and what do you say about the voice of a cartoonist as opposed to the voice of, say, an op-ed writer? What does a cartoonist say that can't be said in an op-ed article, do you think?
It's about the same, I think. You know, I mean, it really is. It's just using your pen to draw something rather than write something. But, yeah, you know, your strong opinion is what people want. And wishy-washy stuff doesn't work, especially in cartooning.
And, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, the history of political cartoons. Are there any great cartoons or cartoonists in history that you find inspiring? Or, you know, what about the person or that cartoon has influenced perhaps your own work?
Oh, wow. Well, I wasn't around when Thomas Nast was around, but there's a guy who had some guts and stood up for the Tammany Hall hooligans that were going on there in the New York City politics. I mean, Tammany Hall was made him famous, you know, besides the fact that he drew the elephant and the donkey, you know. But he brought down some very powerful figures back in the late 1800s, and he was threatened many times, and he did not waver. He kept at it, and eventually the bad people were taken right out of office through his cartoons.
What about Ben Franklin's you know, famous join or die? I think I've heard that's a favorite of yours.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because where do you get your ideas from? People ask me a lot. Well, back in the day when Franklin was, you know, you take a snake and you chop it up and you see all these different pieces and they're all labeled different colonies. And you go, well, what does that mean? Well, there was a folklore back then that if you took a snake and you chopped up and you put the pieces together before the sun went down, the weirdest thing. But people say the snake would not only live, but it would be stronger than ever. And that was just the folklore. So, you know, we have similar things now. I know with crazy Florida, we have a lot of those things. But that's why he did that. So he says, you join these colonies or you're going to die separately. And so that is the first editorial cartoon in our nation's history, 1754.
And beyond its history of using satire to offer critiques, cartooning can have a dark side. It has been used as propaganda and demonized ideas in other cultures and propagated stereotypes. How do you avoid, you know, oversimplification or overly broad generalizations?
Good question. I don't volunteer my cartoons for any political party, for any campaign purposes or anything like that. I refuse to do that. And sometimes people want to buy your original, and it's, that's an influence kind of thing. So you got to be careful. So usually if someone wants my original, wants to pay for it and they want to use it for something, I make sure they're not going to use it for a political purpose. They're just going to hang it on the wall in their office, hopefully. And what I'll do is I'll take a check from them, but they have to write a check to their local charity of choice. So I don't directly take the money. The money goes to the cause that they prefer to go to, but not the political purposes.
And like all aspects of media, you know, cartoons and political cartoons have been transformed by the internet. Have you seen that with your own work in Southwest Florida? And if so, how has that impacted your work? And what do you say to writers, artists, or, you know, other content creators who are, you know, trying to grapple with ways to pay the bills and deliver content to readers through a traditional venue and online?
Well, I'll tell you how fast it works. And over the weekend, I watched my hometown. Well, I grew up in Binghamton, New York, but the little town of Main End, the boys' little league team won the world championship. I was so thrilled. And I sat there and going, well, I should be doing a cartoon about this. Absolutely, I should. So I started drawing right away. I got it done in a couple hours. I colored it. And speaking of the internet, I scanned it. I sent it across the internet, sent it to the editor up in the Binghamton paper, and boy, if they didn't run it the next day. And, you know, there's the power of doing something spontaneously for good or bad and having the internet deliver your visual for you.
And I was wondering if your talent at creating visual art, I'm not necessarily, I'm kind of removing the political context from this question, but does that come into play in helping you out with your current role with Lee Memorial Health Systems as the, arts and healthcare coordinator?
Yeah, I'm blessed. I really am to be able to draw. And I draw for the kids when I can and all the kids, their patients, and for adults as well. And I've been so lucky to be able to do that. Drawing is powerful, and it's also a healing force. So if I can get the kids to want to draw with me, great. If they'll just watch me draw, in some ways that's a healing in a way. Just, I started with Magic Drawing Board back in the days of Captain Kangaroo, and watching that Magic Drawing Board come to life with a drawing just, there was something that stuck with me to be able to draw and use the power of drawing. People are fascinated with the creative process and watching something be born from just a few lines, and then of course it gets more complicated as you get along. But the finished product after what you start with a couple sketches and scratches is pretty amazing. Yeah.
And is your work in that capacity primarily with kids?
It is. I get to work with a lot of wonderful people over at Health Park and the New Galisano Children's Museum or Children's Hospital, and it is just. It's tough to see some of these kids sick like they are, but, that's why I haven't been blessed to be able to draw with them. And also I have wonderful volunteers. Oh, my gosh, they do arts and crafts every day with the kids. They take an art cart around and they cheer them up the best way they can with something creative. I just worked with a wonderful cellist yesterday. You appreciate this being
yes.
She plays the harp. I'm sorry. I thought of you when I thought of cello. But anyways, we're looking for you to come over and help play with us. But anyways.
Well, now you've called me out on the radio, so I have to now.
Yeah. Sorry to do that. But anyways, I've seen you play. You're wonderfully talented too. I just love the fact that you're a musician too. But, music and art are both very healing forces, and we had a cellist harpist there yesterday, and she played so beautifully. And the people who have been waiting for 2, 3, 4 hours for surgery of a loved one, just an anxious, and they were maybe frustrated in a way, but all of a sudden they hear this wonderful harp music, and just settled them down. It brought their blood pressure down. And so to be able to do that every day, work with musicians or artists to just make the patient experience a better one at Lee Memorial is a great blessing for me.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and leave the conversation there as we've come up to the end of the hour. But thanks so much to my guest, Doug McGregor, political cartoonist, children's book writer and illustrator and graphic designer, whose work is now featured in a new retrospective exhibition at Big Arts on Sanibel Island. It collects 36 years of his political cartoons and runs through October 2nd. On September 30th, there will be a public reception for the exhibit from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Thanks so much for speaking with us, Doug.
Oh, you're so welcome. Good to be here.
There's more information on today's show and past editions of the program online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers, Richard Chinqui, A.J. Leonard, Tara Galligan, and our newest producer, Matthew Smith. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.